Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Red Sea Podcast, part of the Over the Monster Network.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied! David Ortiz! David Ortiz! David Ortiz!
And featuring Keaton DeRosier.
It's a grand slam!
Welcome back to the Red Seat Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux. Today, I am joined by Keaton DeRosier of Over the Monster for episode 253 of this show. On today's episode, we're going to get you caught up on how the Sox have been doing. Spoiler alert, not good. We'll get you caught up on some injuries, some news and notes, and then we're going to play a little game of who can we blame. This is sort of a subgenre of the blame pie that we did a few episodes ago, if you remember, but we're going to get into that a little bit more in depth, and then we're going to get to some listener questions. But first, Keaton, how are you faring this evening?
Great. Would be a little bit better if my Chipotle order was correct, but even though it's not 100% correct, it's still Chipotle, so it's still pretty good.
Well, I was happy to learn that cats eat queso before we got on this show. Apparently, Keaton's cat eats all of his human food, so I found that pretty funny.
Yeah. She finally is taking a rest, but I was fighting with her for like a half an hour over my queso, so she's finally napping.
Just, you know, let her gorge on it for a while and she'll just be drunk on queso in the corner of the room. It'll be very adorable.
I let her lick the cap, the little top of the Tupperware, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because once she got a little taste, she came back for more. That didn't work. I thought that would satisfy her. It didn't work.
Yeah, just wet the whistle.
Yep.
All right. Well, we're not here to talk about the diet of Keaton's cat, which seems to be quite good anyhow. But we are here to talk about the Red Sox, and I want to get into some numbers about this team. So since we last spoke, Keaton, the Red Sox dropped four out of their last five games. As we record right now, they're playing their second game in the Atlanta series and currently behind 3-1 as we're recording this currently. The disappointing thing about them dropping, four out of their last five games was that, you know, three of those losses came against the Kansas City Royals, which was just pretty shocking. And I listened to your pre-cap episode with Bailey, and you guys were pretty shocked about that too. But, one of the things that was most alarming to me about that is that, you know, I was going through the numbers today before I got on the podcast, and the Red Sox have the fourth worst run differential in the American League right now. The only teams with a worse run differential than them were the Kansas City Royals, the Detroit Tigers, and the Oakland A's, three of the bottom of the bottom feeder teams in the league. And the fact that we dropped three out of four to Kansas City just like really sort of twists the knife after an incredibly awkward trade deadline. So how did you kind of take that series? That one was not great.
Not only that, after an awkward trade deadline, but after taking two out of three from Houston, who is a very good baseball team.
Right.
I don't know how you follow that up with a dud against Kansas City. That just made it even worse.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder if it was like, because the Houston series was taking place during the trade deadline, so like maybe there was some weird amount of hope injected into the team, and you know, playing KC right after the fallout from the trade deadline, it seemed like sort of all the air was sucked out of the Red Sox clubhouse with the departure of Christian Arroyo and sort of the awkwardness of two guys in Tommy Pham and Eric Hosmer joining the club who probably, you know, should have been on this club at the beginning of the year instead of August 2nd.
Yeah.
The whole thing was weird. But anyhow, the Red Sox are currently 17 games behind the Yankees. They're last place in the division. A little bit of numbers behind this right now. 22nd in starters ERA at 4.41. 25th in bullpen ERA at 4.41. Or if they're nothing if not consistent, Keaton. I found that stat to be kind of hilarious. Same exact bullpen and starters ERA. 14th in WRC Plus at 101, 10th in runs scored at 500, 17th in home runs at 110, and 19th in team defense, the thing that you were so proud of the first couple of months of this season, Keaton. They've dropped all the way to the bottom two-thirds of the league. So just looking at these numbers, which one of these surprises you the most after, you know, a long season of analyzing the Red Sox play? Like, which of these sort of stands out to you as most shocking?
I don't think any of them.
Interesting. I thought for sure you were going to say the fact that they're only 10th in runs scored at 500.
Well, that was the closest. But if you, I mean, you take in the context of like all of the injuries that they've had, and the guys that have been missing from the lineup, like they were missing Devers for a chunk. They were missing Martinez for a chunk. They've been missing Story for a while, who was leading the team in RBIs, who was driving in a bunch of runs, who was only trailing Devers at the time in homers, might actually still be second on the team in homers at the time he went out. So they've been missing a ton. Obviously, Kike Hernandez has been out for a like massive portion of the season. Verdugo started off incredibly hot, and then was super cold, and then has kind of picked it back up again. But he's been, you know, up and down. So I think like in context, 10th makes sense. You know, upper half, but lower upper half. It's kind of fitting. And then again, the rest in context, like the starters ERA, they've been really bad. So that doesn't surprise me. Same with the bullpen. The bullpen has also been really bad. So that doesn't surprise me. Team defense, when you're consistently rolling out both Dalbuch and, well, yeah, Duran, Dalbuch, and
Cordero.
That's the one. Franchi. Yep. All in the same lineup at the same time because of injuries. You have nobody else. You have to play them. Your defense is going to be really bad. So I'm not surprised that the defense turned out to be really bad. So none of them surprised me. They've been really bad lately, and all of these numbers, I don't think it's a surprise as to why.
Yeah, and you know, getting to JD Martinez, who you mentioned with the offense too. This is a guy who we haven't kind of given enough scrutiny to lately. But you know, if you take away the month of May where he hit .406 like Ted Williams, he's been really bad since June. In June, he batted .232 with just three home runs. July, .185 with just one home run. And in August so far, he's even worse. .210 in July. August, .185 with zero home runs so far. So JD Martinez has been doing nothing. In the second half, he's got a .143 average with no home runs. He's a complete zero at the plate. So I think that's one of the moves that as we get further away from this deadline and as this team continues to slip, I'm like, okay, so the Mets were interested in JD and you just kept asking for this reportedly ridiculous package of like, you know, a top prospect, a position player, and like someone else. And I'm thinking to myself as we get further and further away from this, he's been horrible for the majority of the season. and we didn't dump his money so we could get under the CBT, like, that's going to look really bad at the end of the year. Because I don't think you – I don't even think at this point you can realistically say the Red Sox will give him the qualifying offer. I don't think they want him to stay for that money.
Probably not, but how bad are they going to want a draft pick?
I don't think that bad, right? Because the issue with the CBT is that the pick that you're going to get is a fourth rounder at this point. It's not even the second round compensation pick that you would have gotten if you got under the CBT, because you're definitely going to put a qualifying offer on Nathan Eovaldi, like, no question. Yeah. But, you know, since Vasquez is gone, you know, you're not going to put one on him, and you probably weren't, so that was part of the calculus. But, like, I'm not comfortable paying $18 million or whatever it's going to be to J.D. Martinez going into, I mean, what'll that be? His age 35 season next year, and he's been declining each of the last three seasons. No way for me.
Yeah.
But anyhow, a couple injuries on the team as well that I want to get to. Chris Sale. It never stops coming with Chris Sale. Chris Sale falls off his bike allegedly and breaks his wrist, has surgery on his wrist. He's not going to return this year. Did you see the quote from Chaim Bloom about we need to find out whoever has the voodoo doll of Chris Sale?
I didn't, but I agree completely.
This is just insane. What was your reaction to that when you found out that Chris Sale fell off a bike and broke his wrist?
Just kind of like, are you serious? is this the real thing? Is this again? I actually I sent out a tweet from the OTM account that I was like, the only logical thing that I can think of is that Chris Sale sold his soul for the 2018 season to the baseball gods, and it only came with the condition that his bones be replaced with pretzels.
I did see that tweet. I liked it quite a bit.
Yeah,
it's just one thing after another with Chris Sale. It's the Tommy John, which, you know, at least you can expect it's a pitcher's injury. Then the broken rib and the neck issue, and then the finger, the comebacker, and now breaking the wrist. It's just, it's insane how badly this deal has worked out for the Red Sox. And it's really unfortunate because, you know, we all know what caliber of a pitcher Chris Sale is, but at this point it's just like, okay, if he gives you anything over the last 2 years of this contract, that's a bonus at this point. So not worth rehashing that one. We already have talked at length about how we feel about the Chris Sale contract and when it was signed at the time, but just ridiculous. I mean, I can't even be mad at him for riding a bike. Like, normal people ride bikes. So at this point, I don't know.
Just wanted some lunch.
Just wanted some lunch.
After a rehab session. Nuts. Yeah.
When's the last time you rode a bike, Keaton?
When was the last time I rode a bike? Last August in Bar Harbor.
Did you fall?
I did not.
Well, you're better than Chris Sale.
I mean, I won't say I've never fallen, just the last time I didn't.
Well, you're still doing better than Chris Sale, then. All right, next bit of news here on the injury front. Eric Hosmer fouled the ball off of his knee. That really seemed to shake him up. That was, I guess, as you're listening to this 2 days ago, that he fouled the ball off the knee. Did you see the pitch that he fouled?
I didn't.
It was a Charlie Morton pitch with just a crazy amount of spin on it. And Yuke had a pretty good discussion about this thing, about like how pitches with crazy spin bounce in weird directions. And, you know, he fouled it off his kneecap, and I really thought he was going to stay in the game. I was a little surprised that he came out. So I hope that this is not something overly serious where Eric Hosmer is going to require an IL stint or anything like that. I hope there's no fracture. It doesn't seem like there is. It seems like that would have been out there by now. But, you know, nonetheless, Dahlbeck relieved him in that game, played first base the rest of the night, and now Dahlbeck got the start again tonight. So I don't know how much time Eric Hosmer is going to miss. Are you concerned about this knee injury for him?
Yeah. I mean, it's we need to get an update first, but if it turns out to be something pretty serious that, you know, he ends up missing a lot of time and then we have to go back to the platoon of Dahlbeck and Franchi at first, I don't really want to do that. So yeah, that's concerning.
Yeah, it's been really nice just watching Eric Hosmer play competent first base and also watching his professional at-bats. And I know that Eric Hosmer has his warts as a player. You know, he has this absurd ground ball rate. He seems allergic to launch angle, even though apparently he works out with J.D. Martinez sometimes in the offseason. I don't know how he hasn't picked his brain about how to get the ball in the air, but that's a whole nother discussion. But the fact that he has been delivering professional at-bats and fielding the position has just been a tremendous relief to me. What's been your favorite part of the Eric Hosmer experience so far, if you have one?
Well, that's competent fielding at first.
Yeah, it's real nice. Real nice. Okay, Keaton, your boy Tanner Houck, 15-day IL with low back soreness. You concerned about Mr. Houck? Is he getting low back soreness from not pitching? I don't know how this happens.
Yeah, this makes me think that this has been bothering him for a while because his usage, really since the beginning of July, has been so puzzling. And he's gone wild stints where he hasn't been used at all. And then he finally got used in like back-to-back games against the Yankees. And then like that was it. And then it was just continued to have like 4 to 6 days off between stints, and he's supposed to be your closer. And then we're trying to go to Whitlock for 3 innings instead of going to him on 4 or 5 days rest. It couldn't have been something that just popped up. There's no way. And then especially with it being retroactive to the 6th, which was the last time he pitched. It makes me think that this thing has been happening much longer than that. And I first caught on to his puzzling usage in the beginning of July with the Cubs series. That's kind of where I would peg it as having happened. It may have been happening even before then, but I don't think this is something that just popped up. He has to have been dealing with this for much longer than he has been, because really for a while, his usage has just not made sense at all. And it's really kind of made the rest of the bullpen usage extremely puzzling as well. But it's also been kind of coupled with how they've used Whitlock too. I don't understand this 2 innings, 3 days, or just as many days off as innings pitched as he's had, and like keeping him semi stretched out is just stupid. So what they've been doing with the bullpen this year has just been idiotic, to say the least, just in totality. And this just kind of was like the cherry on top of it. And like, well, okay, maybe this explains why they haven't really been using Houck for the last month and a half, even though he's supposed to be your closer. But if that was the case, they really should have tried to get this taken care of sooner, because they're apparently trying to win baseball games. And not having your closer available for 6 to 8 days in a row would kind of limit your ability to do that. So the handling of the usage of the players, and then how they're actually handling guys when they, you know, they need rest and like actual IL stints, has just been puzzling. Just everything about the bullpen this year has been maddeningly infuriating. It's just kind of like, well, add it to the list.
Yeah, I did listen to your discussion with Bailey on the pre-cap about Garrett Whitlock's usage, and I found your discussion about that kind of interesting. It hasn't been as annoying to me, because I've always kind of figured that because they switched Garrett Whitlock from being a true bullpen arm at the beginning of the year to being a starter, and because I think they're 100% planning for him to be a starter next year, since, you know, looking at the rotation right now, Nick Pivetta and Cutter Crawford are probably the only two players who you can count on to be in that rotation next year. I think they see him out of that role.
Chris Sale?
Yeah, right. I just... Sure. I'm sure Chris Sale is going to, like, go down a water slide the wrong way and, like, rip his arm off or something. I don't know. I'm not even mentioning Chris Sale at this point, just because I'm assuming somebody's going to poke the voodoo doll. But, yes, Chris Sale. Anyhow, it seems like that's the way that they want to use him in the future. That being said, it makes the bullpen construction right now maddening, because you basically have John Schreiber as the only reliever who you can count on a night-to-night basis. And then you have, like, a bunch of guys who are just not good. Austin Davis, Sawamura, Barnes, Brazier, Darwinson, Caleb Ort. I mean, out of that group, like, I guess, I don't know. Do I trust Brazier the most at this point? Which is crazy to say. I might.
Good Lord.
Yeah, but that's where we're at. I mean, watching Matt Barnes since he's been back, Eck nailed it on the broadcast. He's like, this dude's afraid to throw strikes right now. He doesn't want to throw anything in the zone. He's not confident in his stuff. He pulls all of his breaking balls. His fastball's not good enough to throw in the zone with confidence. I mean, he's a mess. Darwinson and Caleb Ort should be at AAA. I have no idea why they haven't been churning through Edward Bizzardo and Zach Kelly and Frank German. All three of those guys should be up here instead of some of the options that are up here again. I have no idea why they're doing what they're doing with this bullpen. And I get if you're hamstrung with Garrett Whitlock and you have to use him the way that they're using him, but, like, you got to get some fresh guys up in here. The lack of churn in the bullpen has been maddening to me.
Why does Whitlock's being semi-stretched out, though, matter now? If the plan is to use him as a starter in 2023, why does that matter now?
I would assume just physically. I would assume that he's not feeling 100% physically. That would be my guess. Just kind of like how we were talking about how the usage pattern for Tanner Houck probably told us something about when his back pain started. I would guess that Garrett Whitlock probably isn't quite 100% at this point either.
Wasn't that all the more reason to use him an inning at a time and not try and get three innings in an outing out of him?
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't understand the philosophy of all this stuff that's going on right now, but man, this bullpen is horrible. But do you have any idea why they're not going through and using some of the options at AAA? It seems kind of crazy to me to have, you know, three guys who are probably better than three of the guys that you have in the Major League bullpen just sitting at AAA.
40-man stuff? This is the only thing I can think of? Off the top of my head, I don't know if any of them are. Or are not. I mean, Bizzardo's got to be, right?
Bizzardo's not on the 40-man. German's not on the 40-man. And Zach Kelly's not on the 40-man.
That's the only thing I can think of.
It's just, it's so crazy. When you think about that, like, if they're really protecting 40-man spots, what are we trying to do here? Are we trying to win baseball games? Or are we trying not to win baseball games? Like,
if we're trying to win... That's a great question, Jake. I don't know.
If we're trying to win baseball games, you don't worry about those 40-man spots. You just churn bad players for those spots. Who cares if you lose Caleb Ort or Darwinson Hernandez at this point?
If you listen to the words that they say, you would believe they are trying to win games. And they, I mean, the front office.
Yeah.
Ownership. But if you look at the actions that they have made, you would not be able to tell.
Yeah. Yeah, winning clubs typically are not hugging their 40-man spots in lieu of helping their bullpens. That is very strange. All right. Well, on the positive injury front, Kike Hernandez and Tyler Danish have begun their rehab assignments tonight as we are recording this. And Waka pitched last night for AA Portland and is nearing a return. So those are two good things. Question for you, Keaton. Do you think that once Kike is healthy, Jaren Duran will finally be sent back down?
Yes.
Me too. Can't wait. Psyched for that day. Market it. I'm going to circle it with a nice little happy face in my calendar. So, very excited not to see him play defense anymore.
Unless they put Kike at second.
Oh, God. Kill me. All right. Moving on. JBJ has signed with the Blue Jays. How do you think he looks in royal blue?
I mean, I'm very happy for the man. I'm really annoyed that we're going to have to see him. And he will inevitably rob a home run from probably Devers, because joy, you know, why not? Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, I don't really know what he's going to do up there, right? Don't they have a pretty solid outfield?
Yeah, I think this is a classic defensive replacement sort of figuring for...
Oh, weird. What a weird role for him to fill.
Yeah, imagine that. Yeah. Well, it's much more palatable when the Red Sox are paying his salary.
Yeah, fair.
I'm happy for the guy. Like, yeah. Honestly, I think the Blue Jays are a really good team. I think they could make a lot of noise in the postseason. They were my preseason prediction to go to the World Series. So I hope they do, because these Red Sox sure aren't doing shit in the playoffs or making it to the playoffs, in my opinion. No. Yeah, I feel like I know at this point, but, you know. In other news, the Red Sox signed Jeurys Familia, who was once good with the Mets, and his 6.09 ERA this year. He was just recently released by, I believe, the Phillies. Anything there with Mr. Familia, the big bullpen addition from Heim Bloom?
No.
Nope. I don't even think he gets out of AAA. All right, Keaton. It's time. It's time for the game of blame. So last time we were on, or no, this was several times ago. Several podcasts ago, we decided to break down the blame pie, and we tried to sift, okay, who should we blame for this debacle? Is it ownership? Is it Bloom? Is it Cora? Is it the players? And one of the things that has been brought to my attention by very many people is that maybe the players are not getting as much blame as they should be, because each of those groups of people got 10% or less of the blame when we divvied up our blame pie. So what I wanted to do today with you, Keaton, is to go around and look at the different positions on the diamond and see which ones are sort of playing up to what we should have expected for them, and which players we should actually be giving a little bit more scrutiny to. And I wanted to start at the first base position with Bobby Dalbec and Franchy Cordero, who were the two that sort of, well, I guess it was, to be fair to Cordero, he was still at AAA. But the tandem that we went into the season with, that Heim Bloom decided to start the year with, was Bobby Dalbec and Travis Shaw at first base. Is that Bloom's fault, or is that Travis Shaw and Bobby Dalbec's fault that they have produced at, I have it in front of me here, the 28th worst rate in the league at that position? Whose fault is that?
I'm going to go 75% Bloom, 25% players.
Okay. And I assume that most of that percentage, because Shaw's been gone since like April is on Bobby Dalbec at that point.
Yes.
See, I'm going to go even higher than you. I think it's 90% on Han Bloom, because I think it's crazy that we had such a large sample size of Bobby Dalbec being like a pretty bad hitter and baseball player. And we had this like month and a half long stretch where he was otherworldly last year. And Bloom was like, yeah, you know, we got this. No worries. To Heim Bloom's credit, I do think that he thought if things go south with Dalbec, we have Tristan Casas waiting in the wings. But that just feels very irresponsible for a team that was two wins away from the World Series last year.
Well, that's why I went up to 25%. Because in fairness to Bloom, Bobby Dalbec's second half last year, 270, 344, 611, 149 WRC+. I think we had a large enough sample size to know that he probably wasn't an everyday player, but that's enough of a sample size to think there's a bridge to the future and put your focus on other positions.
I think that's fair. I think that's very fair. All right, let's move on to second base. Currently, the Red Sox rank 21st by Fangraphs WAR at the second base position. They do have 16 home runs and 10 steals at the position this year. Almost all of that production is from from Trevor Story, who hasn't played in quite a while because of injury. Was that the right move, to go out and sign Trevor Story to play second base? Do you have any qualms about that?
No qualms and no blame.
Okay.
I kind of agree with you. No blame in either direction.
I think the jury is still very much out on whether or not the Trevor Story contract is ultimately a good one, because it's a pretty long deal. And so far, I do think he's underproduced. And I think I'm going to go a little bit higher, I guess, on the blame here. I'm going to, instead of saying no blame, I think there should be some blame on Trevor Story for not being more prepared to play this year, because his slash line is way below what it has been for his career. I think we all expected him to hit for more average, have a better OBP, not be quite so streaky. You've pointed out, you know, a number of times on this podcast, the home runs, the stolen bases, the RBIs, that's all been great. But I think for the money, you're expecting a little bit more. The defense has been awesome.
I mean, that's what I was going to say. So, like you pointed out, before he got hurt, he was on pace for a 30-homer, 20-steal season. He was drawing walks at an 8% clip. That's real solid. You're right about the slash line, but the defense was otherworldly. I don't really have a problem with that. Everything else, like, he was producing. We wanted him to produce and play really good defense. That's what he was doing. I'm not really going to qualm about his average being a bit lower. Guy's first year in Boston and in the AL East in general is always a really tough transition. I'm not really concerned yet. I think he's doing fine. Obviously, being hurt sucks, but he's also never had injury history. He's played 140-plus games in every single year that he's played. Played all but one game in the shortened 2020 season. So, I mean, he's never had injury history until now, and he's been producing. No problem.
One of the things that I find weird about Trevor Story's season is that, one of the trends we've seen from him since he debuted with Colorado in 2016 is we've seen his K rate drop every year, pretty much. I mean, his first full season, it was 34.4%, went down to 25%, kind of stayed right around that area, 26%. Then it dropped to 24%, 23% in 2021. And this year, it's shot all the way up to 30.7%. So do you think that, you know, in the future here for the Red Sox, that Trevor Story is going to be able to get that K rate under control again?
Yeah.
Okay. I hope so. I hope so. But I would not say that that is overall a problem. All right, moving on to the next position here is shortstop, Xander Bogaerts. Any issue with Blame going Bloom going into the season? Yeah, I almost called him Blame. Hi, I'm Blame. Bloom going into the season with Xander Bogaerts at shortstop?
Nope.
No, absolutely not. Anybody who's being critical of Bogaerts right now, I think you should shut the hell up. And the reason why is because Bogaerts is currently having perhaps his best season. And I know that that seems a little crazy because, you know, the year that we always like to reference as his best year is 2019, where he had 33 home runs, 117 RBIs, batted over 300. Like, he was great. But this year, he's actually playing really good defense. His base running is the best it's been since 2017. He's got 4.3 WAR on the season already. He ended last year at 4.4. So he could very well eclipse his best WAR season ever at age 29. And yes, he's got 9 home runs and just 47 RBIs. That's not ideal. But in many respects, Bogaerts is better than ever.
Yeah. You hit it all. 100% agree.
All right, Devers, we're going to skip that position because if anybody has a problem with Devers, you don't watch baseball.
Yeah.
All right, Alex Verdugo, who is now the right fielder but spent most of the year in left field. So I'm going to grade him out as a left fielder for the purposes of this. Going into the season with Alex Verdugo as the left fielder, can you blame Bloom or can you blame Alex Verdugo for underproducing this year?
Verdugo.
I agree with you. So Verdugo has gotten his average up to a decent level at this point because he's been playing pretty good baseball recently. He's hitting 272, but he had been pretty bad for long stretches of this year. And if you look at his slash line, he's still only got a 312 OBP. He's not walking nearly as much as he had the last couple of years. And the power has definitely not come along like we sort of expected it would and like we kind of thought it would. We kind of expected a jump in that. And he's on pace for 11 home runs right now. It's not ideal for a guy who we got 2 WAR out of basically the last 2 seasons. He's basically on pace for a little shy of 2 WAR here in his third season in Boston. I was sort of expecting the jump from him. Do you think that that's still in there at all? Like, what is wrong with what Verdugo's doing at this point? What can you see that's going wrong with him?
I'm not sure. But I think what we saw the first month really kind of like that was like he's not prone to having those like hot streaks like that. That was like the jump forward we kind of all expected we could get across a full season, and then all of a sudden he just hit a wall. But it was like he hit a weird wall, right? Because he was still hitting the ball super hard and he was having awful BABIP luck, and now he's kind of like turned some of that around. So I still think that potential is there, but the window is closing to reach it. So if he is going to reach it, we're probably looking at like next season to finally put it together for a full season. That's kind of like the last opportunity there. Or we're kind of like just, we're looking at a consistent 2 WAR season over season guy. It's not a bad player. It's a decent player. But I think then we're going to need to start adjusting our expectations to, you know, what we're going to get in, you know, year in, year out from Verdugo. And I think we had a lot of really high expectations for him coming into the year. And for a portion of the season, he was meeting and or exceeding them, which either kind of confirmed it or gave people even more hope, or raised people's expectations, and then just kind of fell off the face of the earth for a really extended period of time, which just added to the frustrations. So, yeah, I think that's on him.
Yeah, I would agree that it's on him. I'm going to place like 75% of the blame on him, and I'm not going to place any blame on Bloom for this one. I'm going to place 25% of the blame on just simply bad luck, because looking at his StatCast data this year, one of the things that's remained consistent with him is that he's drastically underperformed all of his expected stats. So,
yeah,
you know, right now, 272 batting average, 290 expected batting average, 389 slugging percentage, 441 expected slugging percentage. His WOBA is 304. His ex-WOBA is 333. So in very many ways, he's actually been nearly as good as he was last year. That being said, he hasn't taken the jump forward and his barrel rate's down a little bit. I do still think that, you know, Verdugo is going to play all next year, 26, essentially. He just turned 26. I do think he's going to have one or two, like four WAR seasons in there. I still think that's there. But I do think that that is something I was expecting to happen this season rather than in the future.
Yep.
All right, center field. This is a very interesting position because this was one where Kike Hernandez just played amazing last year for this team. You know, he's been hurt most of the year. When he hasn't been hurt, he's been drastically underperforming. He had his best year ever last year, 4.1 F4 season, produced offensively, had 20 home runs, 60 RBIs, batted 250, 110 WRC plus. This year, 69 WRC plus, you know, in 51 games played. Can we blame Bloom for thinking that he was going to sort of repeat what he did in that huge career year? Or do we place the blame on Kike?
Player. I mean, no, none. Because I don't think I put blame on anyone for that. I mean, I guess I was, initially I was going to say player, but I mean, you can't really blame him for being injured. None. I think what the plan was for center field was fine going into the season. So, yeah, I have no problem with that.
I'm going to play devil's advocate with you here for just a minute. And one of the things we talked about last year was his splits when he was playing center field versus when he was playing second base. And he was like one of the better hitters in the league when he was playing center field. Second base, but when he was playing center field, he was awful. So let me give you his career splits at those particular positions. As a second baseman, he is hitting 272 with 27 home runs, and he has a 115 WRC plus. Over his career as a center fielder, he has an 85 WRC plus with a 219 average. Much worse player offensively. Those splits were even more drastic in 2021, where he hit well over 300 with a lot of power at second base and was less than 100 WRC plus when he was playing center field. Do you think that Bloom should have realized that a little bit and maybe, I don't know, instead of bringing in Trevor Story to play second base, maybe play Kike at second base and bring in a real center fielder?
No. I don't.
So do you think it's just noise? Because he's got, those are the two positions he's played the most at. He has 217 games over his career at second base and 293 games over his career at center field. So those are like not small sample sizes.
Right. I'd rather have, there weren't really great options for outfield. because we talked about that a lot, especially for center field. But the like the infield options were for the free agent class, so you would have had to work a trade to bring in a center fielder, which I mean, I guess you could have, but going into this offseason, I wanted Trevor Story on the team way back in the beginning of, I mean, pretty much when the season ended, and he was a free agent. And we were going through like targets that we wanted on the, I told you Story was a guy that I wanted. So I was pretty happy when I got him. So I'm happy with the way that that turned out. And I was fine. So Gigi Hernandez had a really good year last year. And that was, I know that was, to your point, splitting time between the two positions. So though there's some of those splits there. But I also think there's something to not moving a guy around and saying, this is your role, this is where you're going to be, and having that freedom. Especially when he was with the Dodgers, he was all over the place. He was playing a lot of center and second, but the Dodgers had a bunch of guys in the outfield that they were rotating around all the time. So, he wasn't getting consistent time in the outfield. So yeah, I think that some of the noise there between those two splits could have been leveled out a bit by giving him like a permanent role and saying, you know, this is what you're going to do for us every day. And kind of taking some of the questions out of where he's going to go, where he's going to play, and those kind of things. So I don't think, and then just coming off the year that he had last year, I don't know how you could have, like he was obviously going to play, so he had to go somewhere, and bring in Trevor Story, who was, especially when they signed him, the best option available to bring in.
And a great defender in his own right at second base as well.
Yeah. The best bat available when they brought him in, unless they were going to make a move earlier, which, you know, you could say, knowing that a lockout was coming or whatever, you didn't really know what was going to happen, so they had to wait, whatever. But, yeah, I'm fine with the way that that worked out and going into the season with him in center field. Where I was going to give or was giving some of the blame to the player, was he had just an awful start to the season before he was finally put on the DL or IL. Mm-hmm. And that's on him because that was bad. That was atrocious.
Yeah.
I don't think he can get bailed out by going on the IL for how bad he started the season.
I agree with that. And just to let you know, even though I played devil's advocate, I agree with you. I don't think there's any way you don't start the season with him as your center fielder, because he was pretty much the best center fielder in baseball defensively last year. So I think it was a sound decision. I do think that there is something to these splits. I think it's clearly more taxing for him to play center field, but I think that it's worth it. And I don't think that the .339 average that he had at second base versus .213 at center field last year, I don't think it would have been that bad over the course of a full season. Like you said, I think it would have evened out and maybe it would have become a little bit more effortless for him at center field. So I think it was a sound decision by Bloom. I definitely do give him a little bit of the blame for the slow start, but I think that this one's like 50% blame Kike for the slow start and 50% blame Kike or 50% blame the injury, which is just, you know, shit happens. It's baseball. So no real issues there. All right. Right field. Whoa. Get ready for some blame pie, Keaton. So after having a wonderful 2021 season from Hunter Renfroe, Bloom decided to get real cute and go ahead and trade Hunter Renfroe at the peak of his value for two middling prospects who probably won't ever make a big league impact, and Jackie Bradley Jr., who was the worst hitter in all of baseball last year. And his plan was to go into the season, apparently, with Jackie Bradley Jr. as the everyday right fielder. As we mentioned, Jackie Bradley Jr. now plays for the Blue Jays as a fourth outfielder. How much of the blame do you give Chaim Bloom for this one?
100%.
Can we do the thing where you overestimated your blame pie last time when you came up with 110%? Okay, good. Because I think he deserves 110% of the blame for going in. Like, this never made any sense. I remember talking to you and Matt and like everybody else at the site when this happened. We were just all like, okay, cool. This makes sense now that he's a fourth outfielder. And we're going to go sign a right fielder. So I guess we're getting Seiya Suzuki. And then crickets.
Even before that, I was pissed that they traded Renfro. And you know this from our time at the Dynasty Guru. I've been a Hunter Renfro fan for years. And any chance I could get to talk about him on that podcast, I would. So I was delighted when the Red Sox signed him, because then I could talk about him more. You thought you never had to talk about him again when we stopped doing that podcast. And, you know, joke's on you. We got to talk about him all the time because then he was playing for the Red Sox. So I was so excited. So he has the best year of his career and then gets traded. I was pissed just because he's one of my favorite players. So I was furious. But you're right. Follow that up with, there's no way we're going into the season with JBJ as the everyday right fielder. That doesn't make any sort of sense. Fourth outfielder, perfect role for him. Makes all the sense in the world. This wasn't a situation where, like, with, like, at first base, where Dalbach had, like, shown a spark for a couple months the season before to give you a little bit of hope that he could be something for some period of time in the coming season. The year before, Jackie Bradley Jr. was the worst hitter in the majors. And for a long time, you knew that offense was not his specialty. Defense was. And he really wasn't an everyday player. And fourth outfielder was his role. And you were like, hey, let's take a guy who we know exactly what his role is and not put him in that role. That's what we're going to do. That seems like a great plan. And lo and behold, it didn't work. How crazy is that?
Yeah, it. This was the most egregious position that Bloom went into the year with. I agree. It was just beyond terrible. This is the one that he should just get killed for over and over and over again. I don't understand it. It was incomplete. It was irresponsible.
To your point, though, when that move happened, it seemed like that had to be tied to another move.
Right.
And I don't know how you basically don't follow through on that. Like, if you have a plan to, okay, we're going to move Renfro, we're going to get our fourth outfielder, lock down the defense, and then we're going to get our bat first outfielder to fill that void, whether that's Seiya Suzuki or somebody else. You have to make that happen. If that was your plan, you can't not make that happen. Whatever you have to do to make that happen, you've got to do it. You can't not. If you have a two-piece plan, you've got to execute both pieces of it. You can't just do one and be like, you know, we tried to do the other piece of it, but it didn't quite work. Then don't do the first part.
Right.
If you can't do both, then don't do any of it.
Yep. Totally agree. Totally agree. Catcher, probably not worth talking about because Christian Vasquez was the third or fourth best hitter on this team when he was just traded. Did you have any issue with them going into the season with running back the tandem of Pawecki and Vasquez?
Nope.
Me neither. I thought that was a sound decision. A really interesting one, though, is JD Martinez at DH. And this was something that we talked about a lot in the offseason, especially because, you know, one of the guys we were trying to figure out where he might fit with this team was Kyle Schwarber. And there was a lot of speculation that, well, it wasn't even really speculation. It was pretty much well known around baseball that they were going to have the universal DH, which would, in that, you know, way, open up the trade market for JD Martinez, you know, to move to any number of these teams that now has a DH spot. And the Red Sox, you know, maybe they didn't find the right fit for JD Martinez or whatever. They decided to bring him back. He opted into his deal and they didn't trade him. But I think that this is one where I would actually give some of the blame to Heim Bloom for not being aggressive with bringing Schwarber back and not offloading JD Martinez. And I'm still shocked that he's here after the deadline because, you know, I was looking at his numbers and we all know JD Martinez had a really bad 2020 season where he pretty much didn't hit well at all over the course of the whole season. But, you know, he had X batting averages that season of 233 versus fastballs, 229 versus breaking pitches, and 215 versus off speed. Okay, fine. You know, it's a short season, small sample size, weird stuff happened in 2020. We can write that off. He rebounded big time in 2021, 310 XBA against fastballs, 244 against breaking pitches, 303 against off speed. Okay, still a pretty good player. Struggling a little with breaking pitches, but like you can live with that. This year, things have gone a different direction. So his XBA versus fastballs is still strong, 325. He still hits the fastball. But against breaking pitches, 217. Off-speed pitches, 221. We've seen the massive struggles recently. He's actually struggled with the fastball recently during this slump that he's been in as well. He's not been good. I think his decline has been sort of advertised in a lot of ways. I remember talking about this with Matt and you on the podcast before. This is something we've seen creeping in different areas of his game, especially against different pitch types over the last few years. How much blame do you think we can give to Bloom for the fact that, you know, Kyle Schwarber's over here leading the National League in home runs. JD Martinez has like, what, 9 home runs on the season this year at the DH spot, and you held on to the guy?
I don't know if you can put a ton of blame on Bloom for that one. I mean, it was more on JD Martinez opting in or out of his deal. Once he opted in, he was here. I don't know if he was really going to, if you were going to trade him once he opted in. Having 1 year left on his deal, I don't know why you would have, especially thinking like coming off of a team that was 2 wins away from the World Series. You think you're better, you have a better chance of putting a winning product on the field with him on the team. To your point about Schwarber, though, if you're going to bring him back, I don't know why you wouldn't have and then put him at first. And then had that tandem of JD Martinez at DH, Schwarber at first. And then once you got through this year with JD and JD's gone, then moved Schwarber to DH.
Yeah,
that would have made a lot of sense.
I think you're ultimately right. And that's kind of what we wanted to do, to give a little bit more insurance that super unsure first base position was, yeah, you're probably unlikely to get a package you wanted for JD Martinez. So I agree with you. I don't put a lot of blame on Bloom. I put some blame on JD Martinez for his skills slipping. But again, like, I don't know how much to put on a 34-year-old aging slugger that his skills are getting worse. Like, okay, what do we expect? They're not terrible. There's still a fair amount of red on his baseball savant.
Well, that's what
page.
I was gonna say. It's like his hard hit rate is still elite,
right?
And like his exit velo, and yeah, he's still hitting the shit out of the ball. His strikeout rate and his walk rate is still like pretty much the same as it's been the last 3 years. The no power thing is weird, and I wonder how much of that is affected with the ball, right? Because like power is down all over the place. It's and then you just think of like how hot he was for, you know, the first half of the year. You pointed out he's been really, really bad as of late. But it's not like he's still got a 345 OBP even with how bad he's been,
yeah,
over that extended period of time, because he was so freaking good to start. Like, I don't know. It's weird, but I don't blame Bloom for sticking with him for that last year, especially. I mean, it was really, it was like 100% on him. Once he opted in, he was here.
Well, you can still trade him at that point.
Yeah. And you think you're going into the season with a chance to, again, compete and maybe, like, you know, be at the top of the American League here. You want him on the roster. You want him in the lineup every day.
Yeah, and it's that, like, so you said, it's not like they couldn't have found a spot for Schwarber had they decided to bring him back. I mean, you can play him a little bit in the outfield. You can play him, you know, at first base, which was a black hole for so long. And he made perfect sense as the DH in the future for this team in the JD Martinez replacement. And for a team that struggled with power, we already mentioned it, only 110 home runs this year, sure would have helped to have Kyle Schwarber and Hunter Renfroe and all that power on this team.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
True.
All right, let's get to the pitching side here. Let's start with relief. Relief pitching has been abominable. We knew it was going to be abominable. It's been just as bad as we thought. How much blame do you put on Bloom for this one?
75, 25% players. Okay. Maybe 80-20.
80-20 Bloom to players?
Yeah.
Okay, so Schreiber has done exactly what no one expected and been like the man.
Yeah.
Hauk has been fine. Whitlock has been fine. Who else can you really look at and say, like, I thought you were going to be really good, but you've been really bad? Barnes?
Yeah.
I think Barnes is the only guy. Because when we looked at the... Well, I think you could maybe criticize Matt Strom for not being quite as good as we thought he could be, but I think he's been fine. But, like, when we looked at the Diekman signing, I remember both of us being like, why are we getting another version of Matt Barnes?
Yep.
And he turned out to be just bad Matt Barnes.
Yep.
But left-handed. So, I don't know, man. I feel like your percentage is probably right, 80-20 for that one. But, like, this was, aside from right field, this was the by far the most obvious position that Bloom completely failed at upgrading this past offseason. Starting pitcher. This is probably the most interesting one to me. Because I think we all assumed that Chris Sale was going to be healthy coming into this season. Nathan Eovaldi was coming off an excellent year where he received some Cy Young votes. We did think it was weird that they signed Rich Hill and Michael Wacha, two guys who, you know, have had performance and injury issues over the last couple of years to fill in that spot. But, you know, to the credit of Chaim Bloom, they had a lot of depth at the AAA level that they hadn't had before. Guys like Cutter Crawford, Josh Winkowski, you know, Brian Bayo emerging. They had James Paxton waiting in the wings. Tanner Houck could start if you needed him to. Like, there was sort of a lot of guys there. Connor Siebold, another one. Brandon Walter, like, a lot of dudes. How did you feel about the pitching going into the year? And how much of this do you think ought to have been thought of by Bloom?
I didn't feel great, but here's how I would serve up the blame pie for how we got where we are. 25% Bloom, 25% players, 25% bad luck, 25% my poor expectations.
Interesting.
And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I was actually wrong about a lot. I didn't think Walker was going to be any good at all. Turns out he's very good. I didn't have any faith in Nick Pivetta. I think I was wrong. I know that he obviously has been, he had just a god-awful month and a half, June, July. It's been a little bit better as of late. But he's been healthy. He's been relatively consistent. He should be your number five starter, and that's kind of what you can ask of your fifth starter. I think the moves that Bloom made, bringing in Rich Hill and Wacha, were for the most part good. They've been hammered by injuries, as you pointed out. Some of it should have been some foresight, like bringing in Rich Hill and Waka, who have had injury history.
Yep.
But some of it, not so much, like all of the other injuries. That's not kind of things that you could have anticipated or kind of planned for. And I think the majority of the injuries that they had are not ones that they really could have anticipated or expected. Some of the performances of the pitchers have been pretty bad. And like the stretch from Pivetta after being really good. But the depth has been very surprising. Wasn't really expecting to get much out of the depth, even though they had it. And to have Winkowski and Carter Crawford doing what they're doing, they've exceeded my expectations. I didn't think we could really rely on them at all. So I think I was wrong about a lot of the starting pitching. And I think when we were doing our priorities, I think relief pitching was my top priority.
Yep.
And starting pitching, I think, was my second. And like first and right were behind both of those.
Mm-hmm.
Hindsight, I don't think I needed to be as concerned with the starting pitching. I think our relief pitching is still absolutely number one. But the right field and first base, I think, because they actually have pitching covered for the most part, besides the freak injuries.
Yeah, I agree. I was not really super concerned with the starting pitching, and I actually think Bloom did fine on this. I would probably give Bloom 15% of the blame, and I'm going to give like 50% to the players, because I think a lot of guys have underperformed. And you know, the rest of the blame pie I just give to injuries. Like, pitching injuries happen. I fully expected Chris Sale to be fully healthy and pitch a full season this year. I fully expected that Nathan Eovaldi had figured out his body and, you know, was going to be a horse again. I expected Pivetta to be a fine fifth starter. He's been asked to be a two starter a lot of the year. And I thought, like, Waka and Hill, I was like, all right, I don't love this, but between the two of them, you're probably going to get like one spot figured out for the year. So like, that's okay. And, you know, you'll figure out the rest. So yeah, I don't think that is a huge concern. It's just been really, really freaking unlucky this year.
Yep.
I agree. Okay. Well, that was fun. So just to sum it up, we're blaming Kike, Verdugo, and sort of Trevor Story, right?
Kind of.
Well, not really. We're not really blaming Trevor Story. And we're putting a crap ton of blame on Bloom for right field, first base, in the bullpen. Does that sum it up?
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Let's get to listener questions. Our first question comes from Shelly Firstrate, Verstrate. And she says, Brody Jackson has a dream job, referencing one of the players in the Little League World Series. His dream job is a chicken nugget taster. Keaton, what would be your dream job?
That was a fire emoji dream job. Doesn't look like the fire emoji copied over from the tweet.
Yeah, that's right.
But that's I was trying to think about this, and I kept coming back to just like something hanging out on the ocean or near the ocean, eating a lot of oysters and just relaxing.
That's pretty nice. Yeah. Oyster eater, oyster taster.
Well, I don't know about tester. Because that I'd like them to be like well prepared, like zero risk.
Any risky oysters?
Yeah,
that's a pretty good one. I was thinking about this for a while, and I asked my wife independently too, like what she thought my dream job would be, and we both independently came up with my ideal dream job would to be like a tenured history professor at some college, which would also give me the ability to like travel and do research for a long period of time. which would be awesome because I'm just a regular, like, middle school history teacher, but it would be amazing to, like, be able to travel and do research and not have to work as much as a regular teacher has to work. So that would be sweet.
And steal the Declaration of Independence?
Yeah, it sounds like a pretty good movie. We should make that. Our fearless leader, Dan Secatore, or I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, Dan Secatore, you'll have to tell me, Dan. But he is our new editor-in-chief here at Over the Monster. He says, when will Brian join Slack?
I'm going to say 10 days.
So I think I have the perfect answer to this one. And he's referencing Brian Joyner for all the listeners out there. So our Slack channel, which Keaton so graciously created, Brian hasn't joined yet. And I think that if you tell Brian not to join the Slack channel, he will immediately join the Slack channel.
Yeah. Now I'm going to wait 10 days and do that. So.
All right, next one comes from House of Kuzu, and he has two. He says, first one here, people think this can only happen in the NBA, but what if Xander walks and Devers demands a trade? The disrespecting offers to him and Xander, plus the horrible trade deadlines on back-to-back seasons would be enough reasons. Would that get Haim fired? So let's address the first one first. Do you think there's any chance Devers demands a trade if Xander is gone?
No, but not that, it's out of the realm of possibility for baseball. I think it happens not infrequently, but, if memory serves, didn't, Stanton request a trade?
I don't remember. That does sound familiar though.
Yeah. I think it definitely happens, but it doesn't happen when you have 1 year left. So especially with – so the thing with baseball is the players can demand a trade all they want. With the team control thing, they have zero power. But him being in the last year of his contract, he can tell them, hey, guys, I'm not resigning.
Right.
And then there's no point in the Red Sox letting him walk at the end of the year and not getting anything for him. So there's – more incentive for the Red Sox to trade him by him saying, yeah, I'm not going to resign with you guys. So that's kind of really the form of how that happens in baseball.
Yeah.
Of how guys demand trades is them just basically telling the team that they're on, I'm not resigning with you. So that's right. Kind of how it happens. Like, and yeah, I could imagine Devers saying that. And I disagree with you on Mookie, but then we've been over that a million times. But I could see Devers saying that, being like, yeah, you know, for, you know, the 6 years I've been here, I saw what happened to Mookie. I just saw what you did with Devers. You haven't really shown me that the team is moving in any kind of direction. I don't feel like this is a place for me. And then they make a move.
Well, let me reframe this then. If we get to the 2024 season and Xander and Devers are both playing on other teams, Haim Bloom still here?
Oh boy. I mean, there's a bunch of other factors. I mean, who has replaced them?
I don't know.
If man. Nobody has replaced them, no, he's not. If he has made two large signings and or trades to replace them, yes.
I don't think there's any chance Bloom is here if both of those guys are gone. I'm going to say 0% chance that Bloom is here if those two are not. I think you need to have at least Devers for Bloom to keep his job.
Really?
Because if not Devers, then who? Who the hell are you giving money to if you're not giving money to Devers?
Juan Soto.
Yeah, and he plays for a different team.
Right now, sure. But you said 2024. 2024, yeah, Juan 2024 Soto could be a free agent.
No, he's not going to be a free agent yet. He's got 2 years left. So he's got
this year and another year.
He's got 2023 and 2024. He's free agent 2024 off season. He's a year after Devers.
So they'll Padres will trade him in 2024. So they can still get him in 2024.
Wishful thinking, Keaton. All right. He does have a follow-up, though. He says Devers wouldn't bring you top value because he would be in the last season of his contract. You can't let him walk for free. And Bloom is 0-for-1 in those type of trades, referencing the Betts trade. So, yeah, to your point, I mean, you definitely would not get good value for 1 year of Devers.
In fairness to Bloom, that's not just a Bloom thing. Everybody is 0-for in those trades.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of why you don't trade talented players in baseball. You pay them to keep them because it's really freaking hard to find talented baseball players. So when you do, you don't want to let them go. That's the whole point for the outrage. Baseball America.
Makes sense.
Yeah, well, with Baseball America did a helpful analysis here as we approach the trade deadline. It was July 25th they released it. Doing analysis of the last 30 years trades in Major League Baseball where their criteria was a player who within 2 years of being traded had finished in the top 10 of the Major League or like MVP voting for their league in both years or top three in the year before they were traded. There were 17 such instances in the last 30 years. In 13 of those 17, the team that traded away that player came out significantly worse in the trade. And the four where they didn't, it was like sort of close-ish, but it still wasn't great. So the moral of the story is when you have a really talented player, don't trade them. Keep them on your team. So that's where all of this outrage and shit comes from. Or on the flip side, if somebody is trading a superstar player, the hit rate on prospects is so low. Give them whatever prospects they are asking for and take the sure thing because you will come out far, far ahead of whatever, top or 1% outcome you think you're getting by retaining those prospects.
Preach. Preach, Keaton. I agree.
So
I agree.
While Bloom is 0-for-1, it's not really a Bloom thing. Whoever it was that was going to trade Betts was going to lose that trade. And whoever it is that trades the next superstar is going to lose that trade because you just don't win those trades ever.
Yeah, and Betts is having a very good season this year.
He sure is.
All right, next one comes from Hendrick, and he says, why do any of us even bother?
Well, if we didn't, what else would we do?
We'd be dead. The surfing guy has our next question. He says, can we officially stick a fork in him now? The Red Sox. I'm gonna.
Yeah, feels like it.
I'm calling it, man. I don't think there's any chance this team makes the playoffs.
What if Enrique comes back, returns to form? Story comes back, and doesn't even need to return to form. This is what he was before he was hurt. Paxton is the savior that the starting rotation needed. They start using the bullpen how like a bullpen should be used. Is there enough time to turn the tanker?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
They have to play outrageously good baseball against the AL East and everybody outside of the AL East from here on out to get even close. And
they got some duds coming up, though.
Don't see it. Yeah, but they are a dud.
Yeah, you might be right.
All right, our last two questions come from Patty O'D. He says, in keeping with the negativity of 2022, it's almost like he just read our minds before we answered that last question. What Red Sox season were you most disappointed with that was not 2011? So 2011 was the chicken and beer season. Keaton, what was your answer for this one?
2012.
The Bobby V year, huh?
Yeah, that was real disappointing. The team was still loaded with talent. He was supposed to wipe away the sting of 2011 and instead made it so much worse. So much worse. Everything about that year was miserable.
Yeah, that wasn't a good year. That was a really bad year. For me, it was the 2019 season, coming off the World Series. I was doing the Locked On Red Sox podcast with Matt Collins every single day. Overanalyzing everything that happened with this team. According to Baseball Reference, that season, Rafael Devers, 5.4 WAR. Eduardo Rodriguez, 5.5 WAR. Xander Bogaerts, 6.3 WAR. Mookie Betts, who was still on the team, 7.3 WAR. They had a really freaking good team, and they won 84 games. Woof. That was just a really disappointing third-place finish for me. So I always felt like that team should have been way the hell better than they were. All right, and his last question says, on a more positive note, we're going to end the show on a positive note here. Which Sox player have you enjoyed watching most this season?
Devers. In the non-Devers division, probably Schreiber.
Okay. Two good ones. I'm going to go with Xander. Not a shock to anybody, but I've been really trying to sort of soak in this potential last season of Bogaerts. I love him so much, and his defense and leadership and base running and consistency is just awesome. So I've been just really loving watching Xander, and I hope he does have his best ever season this year. By WAR, so that would be pretty cool way if it's gonna end here for it to end, and I hope it's not the end.
What about in the non Devers / Bogey division?
Hasn't been a lot of great stuff. I'm going to say Vasquez before he was traded. I don't know. I've been very attached to Vasquez because of sort of, you know, his humble beginnings with this franchise, being a ninth round pick and, you know, being the third catcher in that draft and him becoming a really good major leaguer. I really liked the fact that he hit so well and was so good with the pitching staff. And, you know, he's going to be missed for me.
Yeah, good one. Yeah.
All right. Well, that is the show tonight. We appreciate you joining us again for another episode of this show. And hopefully Red Sox can start winning some games here and stop breaking limbs and knees and backs and all sorts of stuff. So, you know, we're looking forward to some good stuff happening in the future. We'll see. Thanks for joining me, Keaton. We'll be with you again next week. Follow Keaton on Twitter at @TheSpokenKeats. Follow me on Twitter at @TuffJake. Follow the Over the Monster account at @OverTheMonster. And we'll be with you again next week.